Welcome to episode 22 of the Flow Ninja podcast.
Welcome to Jody Dean's Flow Ninja podcast.
In this episode, I speak to Nadine Sabulski, who is a law of attraction coach, an author, and a speaker, among many other things. And we have a wonderful, meandering, interesting conversation about what she does, about the energetics of the universe, and how we can improve our lives through understanding these universal laws.
Nadine, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Yeah, feeling very blessed.
Awesome.
So you're a law of attraction coach, is that right? Is that would be that the right term, or expert, or?
Well, I would call myself a spiritual mentor and coach. And right. The foundation of everything that I teach is law of attraction based.
Right. Sounds great. So please tell me more about that.
Well, what do you want to know? I mean, that's a big topic, but I could sum it all up. Basically, I believe that we are always creating our reality all the time, day in, day out, moment to moment. You are creating the reality, you're inhabiting the reality that you created. And the question is, are you creating it consciously and intentionally, or just kind of randomly based off of societal programming and your upbringing and your past experiences? And so what I do is I help people kind of step outside their box and reprogram themselves to consciously create the reality that they choose to experience, rather than, you know, the reality that they've kind of been enduring by default.
Amazing. Sounds amazing.
Thanks.
So yeah, what got you into all of this?
My own research and experimentation on the topic, basically. So I'm a huge reader. I've always been a huge reader ever since I was a child. And I really got into fantasy first as like 9 or 10 years old, eight actually, reading the Chronicles of Narnia. And then I was gifted the Neverending Story by my uncle for my 9th birthday. And that kind of got me into fantasy. And then, because of the way the library organizes books, they lump science fiction next to, it's like sci-fi / fantasy, which the two genres are wildly different. So I don't know why they're combined in the Dewey Decimal System. But because of that, I also got into sci-fi at a very young age, you know, like 10 years old, the first sci-fi book I read. And so I've always been fascinated by that intersection of technology. And if you read sci-fi, then you're probably familiar with Clark's third law, which states that any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. And I read a lot of Robert Heinlein. I really got fascinated by metaphysics and sociology and psychology and human potential and all those fun things. So that's been my life's journey. And I've always been an entrepreneur. I've had 9 businesses in just as many industries. over the years. So this is a culmination, a combination of all of my personal interests and then taking my business background and kind of merging them. And out of all the businesses I've started, this one's like my passion child. You know, it's something that I just adore discussing, teaching. You know, I'm the kind of person, like, I go out to a party and I can't do small talk. We got to go deep and we got to talk about what's real and what's really important. And not, not talking about like politics and crap like that, but what's real, really important to the person and like what their innermost thoughts are. Like, I want to dive in, you know? So this kind of culminated in that.
Yeah. I love that. So what I wanted to ask you about actually is share/ask is about the sci-fi, because I was just having a conversation this morning about the sci-fi genre, and I was in the I was in a conversation yesterday with the CEO of a company or a group of companies really that is bringing out technology to the world that most people, 99.99999% of the population, would consider to be complete science fiction.
Nice. What is it?
it's based on resonance.
Okay.
And yeah, and what he said was that one of the main the main actual difficulty they're facing right now with bringing their technologies to market is the incredulity of so-called experts and scientific technical kind of people that are entrusted within their companies and organizations to be the ones who understand stuff, because they're locked into a very myopic understanding of reality that is focused very much within their field and within the parameters and paradigm that they're kind of allowed to think in.
Right.
Right. And this is kind of part of it all. And so what I was sharing with my friend about this was that in my experience, there are people I've met, let's say, in this world who are sci-fi fanatics. They love sci-fi, absolutely love sci-fi, right?
Which I'm one, I love sci-fi.
Right, great. And then I noticed something else with many of these people, which is that they are deeply skeptical of magic, let's say, and of metaphysics, because it's outside of the paradigm. And it does seem to be that they're very unfortunately blinkered by the kind of current scientific paradigms that are accepted in the mainstream journals and that kind of community.
It's funny though, because science, even though it hasn't directly explored metaphysics and like mind body mastery type stuff, studies have shown, every freaking medical study, every single study on a new drug has to include what? A placebo, right? And there is enough evidence stacked up from those studies investigating other drugs. Every single one of them has also been a test of placebos. So there is evidence. There is actual scientific-based evidence that there is something, and it's even recognized that there is a placebo effect. It's just that science, we don't have the tools to scientifically measure the effect of belief, the effect of consciousness. We don't have the tools to take like a snapshot of a person's consciousness and what their beliefs are and what their thoughts are day to day and what their emotional state is and what kind of words are coming out of their mouth and what actions they're doing. We don't have a tool that can capture that. However, if we did, I believe that we would find that there is a direct correlation between what you believe, what you think, what you feel, what you do, and what you say. And when we tweak those, so that's what I do when I work with clients, I tell them, treat it like an experiment. We're going to tweak this and see what the results are. And then we're going to take it a step further and we're going to tweak the next thing and see what the results are. The only way to measure this is to be accountable to yourself and be honest and, you know, do something like journaling where you're literally writing down day in, day out, like what you're, and it takes time. It takes practice. It takes attention. It's not easy, but it's just like, if you're going to go out and learn any kind of new skill, it's just a new skill. And of course, at first it's not going to be easy. It's going to take time to implement and to be, you know, make it a habitual thing. But I manifest amazing things and my clients have manifested amazing things. And we know it's manifestation because it's stuff that doesn't happen normally. You know, like I'll give you two recent examples. I was buying my house a couple years ago and I'd already been renting it and living there for 4 years. And when I got the signed sales contract, I made a list of the things I wanted to change and improve in my house. Top of the list was a new paint job, because prior to this, it was a nasty, like baby diarrhea brown with like a faded forest green trim. Just gross. I thought it was gross. I painted my house violet and red. Okay. So just for comparison, and I'll shoot you a picture if you want to add that into this video. Anyway, that night when I got the sales contract, I made a list and that was top of the list. I put new paint job on the house and I visualize it. And I was like, man, it's going to look so beautiful when it's painted the colors I want it to be. And, you know, repaired a little bit because there was some damaged siding. And I was like, man, it's going to be so beautiful. And I felt like how amazing it would feel to live in that house, a beautiful house instead of a decrepit looking house. And the next morning I got up and I wasn't even consciously trying to do this, but I was, again, sitting outside and it just popped into my head like, man, it's going to look so pretty, you know? And I was just like smiling about it, happy about it. And literally 3 hours later, my investor calls me, because I got the house to a private investor, but he was getting a bank loan for it. So basically, I got a private loan, but he was going to get a regular mortgage. So he calls me up and he goes, so, and we had already had the appraisal done. The appraisal had come back at like $60,000 more than we were paying for the house. So there was already built in equity. He calls me and he goes, the bank says that we have to paint the house before we close. That's not normal. Sorry if I yelled. That's not normal. I've never heard of any bank ever requiring that cosmetic upgrades be made before the close of sale. That's, you know, outside of the realm, and anybody that's out there that's into real estate, you know, that's not normal, especially if it was already appraised at over, you know, I don't know, I math wise, but we had more than 80% loan to value, or, you know, under 80% loan to value already. So that's just one example. And that's just way outside the box. Like that doesn't happen. And I just had one recently, but now like it went out of my head. So if it comes back, I'll share that with you. But stuff like that happens all the time. And it's because I've trained myself to manifest. Gosh, what was it? It was just something that was like a really good demonstration of this. But oh, I got another one. This is a different one.
Please tell us.
Huh?
Yeah, please tell us.
Years ago, this one's from years ago. So I, one part of my practice is I make what I call settings. And I call it that because it's like changing the channel on your reality. Like this is the new channel. And so one of my oldest settings that I've had literally since I was a child, my mom, and I'll kind of give you the genesis of it. My mother was always worried that I would be molested or raped. And around 11 years old, I rebelled against that concept. And I decided that I was not going to live in fear of that for my life. And so I created my first, you know, I unconsciously created my first setting because I didn't know what I was doing back then. But I decided to believe that I'm always safe. I'm always safe. Period. Done. That's just how things are. That's my world. I am always safe. And I have that belief so strong that I would feel confident walking in between a gun battle and saying, hey, guys, chill out, put those down. Like, I know that I'm always safe. So that's the background. So a few years ago, well, this was actually probably like 10 years ago, or almost 12 years ago, actually. Me and my boyfriend at the time, we were driving up I-17, and it was mid-afternoon. Traffic was heavy, but not slow. But there was, you know, all four lanes were filled. Everybody's booking along, doing the speed limit. And people were, you know, driving pretty close. So I was boxed in. And the car in front of me suddenly swerves into the other lane. And I didn't even have time to look over my shoulder to check. You know, I knew because I'm always looking at my mirrors that there was vehicles on both sides of me to where I couldn't change lanes. Right in front of that car. So that car, I try to give a good distance, but I was closer than I should have been. I was about four car lengths behind that car before it moved. Right in front of it, about one car length in front of it, or where it had been, was this giant tire, like a tractor tire, bouncing straight down the road directly at me.
Oh my God.
In the middle of the lane. And me and my boyfriend, I mean, literally it was like four car lengths ahead of me by the time I saw it, right? And I could not, there was no way. I couldn't move anywhere. Me and my boyfriend both just kind of unconsciously like leaned to the side in the vehicle, like that would really do anything. The tractor tire went bounce, directly sideways off the road. There was no breeze. I didn't feel my car rattle. If like a wind that strong would have, you know, we would have felt it, would have seen other signs, but it was this bounce, push, like a hand literally shoved it to the side off the road. Three car lengths in front of me, maybe only two. I mean, it was close. Wow. So stuff like that is not normal. I'm always safe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there's a correlation there. I can't scientifically prove it because we don't have the tools to measure the effect that our consciousness has on reality. But it is demonstrable through experimentation. The scientific establishment doesn't like it because they're like, well, it's not repeatable. Actually, yes, it is repeatable. I've taught hundreds of people how to do this. It is repeatable. The only challenge is that we don't have the tools to accurately measure the change. We can only measure it subjectively and through experience. But we can definitely, I mean, there was a person in the car with me that saw that happen. I wasn't alone in witnessing the fact, you know, my investor called me and told me the bank did this. He's a real estate investor. He's like, I'm like, is that normal? He's like, that's not normal. No. So, you know, it is demonstrable. It is repeatable. Just like any new skill, you have to practice, you have to learn and practice and implement. It's not something like I can just turn a button and like, oh, you're awake now. You know, you have to do the work inside, but it is repeatable.
Yeah. Well, that was a very impassioned couple of examples there.
I've got tons, but yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah,
you're welcome.
I was really with you there on the highway. Yeah.
Oh, trust me, my heart was pounding. Even though I know I'm always safe, you see something like that, there's going to be a physical reaction.
For sure, of course. I'm wondering, what are you most curious about right now?
What am I most curious about?
Mm.
I'm curious about what it would feel like to be uber wealthy, like win the lottery or something, and just be able to more instantly put my ideas into action when it comes to creating things, you know, mm-hmm. like content or inventions or whatever. Like, I'd be curious how it would feel to be like Tony Stark, right? And have that mansion and like the team of people, because I haven't had that in my life. So I'd say that's probably what I'm most curious about right at this moment.
Mm.
So then, good point, because that's the process of manifestation. Curiosity can easily lead to manifestation.
Mm. I like that. I've got this image. I don't know who this Tony Stark is, but I can imagine the kind of
Iron Man. You've seen the Iron Man movies.
Okay, right. Yeah. Iron Man. Well, yeah. So this actually brings me back to the kind of sci-fi.
Right. Full circle.
The full circle, because again, it's this, you know, what we see in the sci-fi world is just apparent magic and the fantastical and the amazing and, you know, whatever it might be, teleportation or human mm-hmm. flight or, you know, any you know, instant manifestation. And, you know, for those who know, who understand, we know that all this is possible.
Right.
In fact, probable, given enough coherence.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is also, you know, like everything that's in the science fiction world that's, for most people is like this dream or this fantasy that wouldn't it be nice, but of course, you know, it defies the laws of physics, therefore it can't possibly ever happen, sort of thing.
Actually, usually in sci-fi, they're using the known laws of physics.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, I like hard sci-fi, and so I think you're maybe mixing up fantasy and sci-fi, because fantasy is completely made up stuff usually, or, you know.
Oh yeah, well yeah.
But sci-fi is generally based upon actual known science. And just extrapolating that, or saying what if, not always, you know, like sometimes there is like the what if scenario. Like I read a really good series about an idea of if we can time, and what the properties of stopped time might be like.
Mm.
And impervious to every type of radio, because it's just a stasis, right? So stuff still dealing with like scientific mind or scientific thought ways of exploring that potential reality. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And what I have to kind of to say about that that comes up for me right now, that's present for me, is this sense of, you know, when I look into what the fears people have, or the blinkers they have, the skepticism, the criticism, etc., what I often feel, and I wonder if this is true for you as well, is that the inner child has had a limited opportunity to play and to imagine and to be magical in itself.
Yeah.
In that person. And that's what I experience. And the more I liberate my own inner child and the magical child, then the more everything is, I'm able to kind of step into this place of like very deep flow and much more accelerated manifestation, because I'm in this wonder and this sense of wonder and joy, mm-hmm. and anything is possible. And it's a place of knowing. So I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yes. Well, that's exactly how it works. And unfortunately, a lot of people have that inner wonder and joy and exploration and curiosity stamped out of them at a young age. I was fortunate to grow up outside of the box, really mm-hmm. outside of the box. I mean, I was in some boxes, but I wasn't in the mainstream boxes. My parents were Seventh-day Adventists, which is a small denomination of Christianity. They worship on the seventh day instead of Sunday, which seventh day is Saturday. I won't go into a lot of detail about the religion, but my point is, like, I was raised, we weren't really allowed to watch television. I mean, we got to Temple, like some old school shows. But in general, we weren't really to a lot of that. I grew up going to a very small church school, which was literally two rooms for all eight grades. So there was four grades in one room. So I think I kind of got an accelerated learning experience too, because I was in that room in first grade, hearing the fourth grade classes, you know. And so I was raised in the religious box, but because of my reading, I got out of that mentally at a very young age as well. When I things, and it started, I think, because a few different things. My mom wouldn't let me, I wanted Barbie dolls. I loved Barbie dolls. And my mom wouldn't let me have Barbie dolls because they were a sex doll and they were a dating doll. Like, what are you supposed to just, you're a Christian? I don't know. but didn't want them because they were dating dolls or whatever. Like, I could care less about Ken. I just wanted a doll that was an adult doll. I didn't want to play with baby dolls because I already knew, like, I didn't want to grow up and be a wife and mother. At a young age, I knew, like, I wanted to be a career woman and go out there and explore the world. And so playing with baby dolls was not as fun. Like, I wanted to have this adult doll and dress her up and, like, fly her on planes and whatever, you know? So my mom didn't get it. And so that was like one of the early So really, because I read so much, I mean, I was reading at college level by fifth grade, and I was reading pretty much all genres. Still, you know, my favorites were still sci-fi and fantasy. And so I had a very outside the box upbringing. And so when I entered mainstream world in like ninth grade, going to public high school after all these years, and they're all of a sudden I'm combining with these kids that know a lot about pop culture. My friends pick up and have that. great, and I'm like getting thrown into the bigger fish pond of all these mainstream kids. And so because of my outside the box upbringing, see the boxes that people have put themselves in, if that makes sense. And think it's normal. I'm like, not optimal, you know? Mainstream, and even I remember even in church school, my teacher was a dream thief. So in first grade, we had a share what we wanted to be when we grew up. And can you guess what I want?
Tell me.
I wanted to be a ballerina. And my teacher was like, well, you would have had to have started 3 years ago and it's too late. In first grade. I don't think people like, and it's not maliciousness generally, you know. My teacher wasn't trying to steal my dream. But she also didn't need to say that.
No.
She could have totally said, wow, you have such grace and beauty. I'm sure you could be a ballerina, you know, or that's fantastic. Why don't you talk to your parents about starting dance lessons? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many different ways that we could support our young minds in development. And there are dream thieves everywhere. They could be your parents. They could be your teachers. They could be your peers. They could be your partners. They could be your lovers, your friends. Anybody could have been a dream thief to you. And so, yeah, you see that for what it is and recuperate that childlike sense of joy and wonder and curiosity and dreaming big, regardless of what the dream is. Now, I did go on to become a professional dancer for many years, not a ballerina, but I probably had a lot more freedom than I would have had being a ballerina. And I traveled around and danced professionally for about 13 years. So take that, Mrs. Kowalski.
Right. I love this concept of the dream thief. Well, I say, I love it. I'm curious about it, the dream thief, as a concept to play with. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
It does say my connection is unstable. I don't know if that means it's my connection. And it says limited access for some reason on my internet. Let me try logging off and logging. Oh, I hope I don't lose this call because I just tried to like switch to my different Wi-Fi channel. Okay. Mm-hmm. No, it's connected.
Yeah, that's good.
That works. That's good. Yeah. I just did that in the middle of a call. Oops.
Yeah. Yeah, just this idea about the dream thief and so then I'm wondering what is the archetype that we want, like what kind of people around that we want, or that you would okay, out with the dream thieves, in with
well, if I was running the world, which I will be someday, I'm sure, right? I would start with our educational system and revamp it entirely. So the educational system that we have is very outdated. It began, you know, and when I say educational system, I'm talking about everything from kindergarten through college. Although colleges were around prior to this, but the whole grade school thing, Initially, it was a good idea. Okay. Prior to public education like we have today, only the wealthy were educated. This is true, right? This is a fact. So I want you to understand, I see, you know, all sides of things. But the educational system that we have today was started in response to the Industrial Revolution and factory owners wanting an educated workforce, at least educated enough to operate the machinery and do their jobs. So our educational system that was invented back then in like the early 1900s to fulfill the, or, you know, late 1800s, whenever, not great with dates. It was created to fulfill that purpose. And yet our society has shifted and changed dramatically since those days. Yet our educational system has remained largely the same. We're still teaching the same subjects. We're still treating children as worker bees, right? You have lunch breaks, you have your playground breaks, you have to ask for permission to go to the bathroom. Like there's all these workforce type things that are embedded in our educational system. What do you get? Bad grades if you're late or if you miss school. That's all from the workforce training rigmarole, right? Mm-hmm. But today we have an age of, this is the internet age. We have the age of information, and yet we're not teaching our kids how to think critically, which is a huge no-brainer. It should be. Mm-hmm. We're not teaching critical thinking skills. We're not teaching communication skills, which is another big one. You know, we really need to be competitive, even for the workforce, to be competitive in a global environment. So those are two things that I would say right out the gate. We also should be teaching our kids more about how their minds and bodies actually work, instead of, oh, you're too young to understand things about your body. No, you know what? Children freaking masturbate. Do they or do they not? A baby wearing diapers will stick their hand in their pants to fiddle with themselves because it feels good. Yet we deny that that happens. We put this shroud of mystery over the human body. Even in biology, they're still taught really random things that were not really about our bodies. I recently read a thread where the women were like, it was like from a Twitter conversation or something, where women were chiming in with bizarre things their boyfriends believed about their bodies. Grown men, right? One of them was like, my boyfriend thinks that all women get their period on the 15th of the month. He's 25. You know, another one, I mean, there was this whole thread. I'm not going to say all of them, but the amount of ignorance about ourselves and about how to effectively communicate with other people is astounding. And that's huge to success in any area of life. And we're not teaching our kids these things. Mm-hmm. And that is what I would say. Usher in the age of, instead of dream thieves, usher in the educators.
So important, yeah, the kind of education.
And things that really matter. I mean, kids aren't even being taught life skills in class anymore. It's ridiculous. Where the home ec classes go, and where the shop classes go, and where, you know, what happened? I don't know. But, and also in today's day and age, we understand a lot more about how people learn effectively. We understand a lot more that there are different learning styles. We understand a lot more about the fact that people's brains process data differently. Now, we're still labeling those differences as being abnormal or disorders, which is bullshit. It's just, we operate differently. It doesn't mean that the person's abnormal or has a disorder. It's just differently from what the cookie cutter that they try to force everybody into in our general education system, which is another reason why it doesn't work that great. So knowing this, we could develop, and we have computers, we have survey technology, we have all these tools. We could develop a system that takes each individual child down the path of learning that will work best for them. It will deliver lessons in the way that they learn best. And it will also deliver lessons based upon where they are and where they, your, where their interests are, in ways that can teach them all the subjects, yet allow them to explore their passions and interests at the same time. We have the technology to do this. We have the understanding of how the human brain works to do this. And we, it would be so much more effective to do this. Mm-hmm. Yes, kids still need socialization. They need to play with their peers, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. But wouldn't it be great if they had that socialization in an environment that taught them communication skills while they were doing so?
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, that's how I would, that would be one of the first things I would change if I was in charge of all the things.
Yeah. Okay. And to follow on from that, I really wanted to ask you, yeah, like what would be, for example, three main tips that you could give our audience in terms of the work that you do? Like, if there was three main things, you go, okay, do this, do this, and do this, what would they be?
Okay, well, let me preface that by saying, I can sum up the totality of everything I teach with one sentence. This is not the do this part though, but this is the, this sure. is the background understanding. You get more of whatever you focus on. And your foci, you have five foci. Your foci are your beliefs, which you're usually not conscious of. Your thoughts, which we have so many of every day that it would be terribly difficult to police every single one. But those thoughts are based on your beliefs, right? And then you have your feelings or your emotions. And again, this is something we're not taught consciously to control. But where I start with my clients is in the emotional center first. I do emotional training. I used to do the other four first, but I used to try to get people to change their beliefs and change their thoughts and change their words, change their actions. Those are your five foci: beliefs, thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. I used to focus first on beliefs and thoughts and then words and actions. And it wasn't, I would say that was like the first 7 years of my coaching. And then I stumbled upon emotional and understanding how, and I actually had done it to myself, but didn't consciously understand what I did. But as I was taking my clients through these processes I teach, I realized that doing the emotional aspect first actually helps support making all the changes in the other four areas. It's a lot easier to change your beliefs if you know how to make your emotional state congruent with the new belief. And basically use that emotional state to anchor the new belief. It's a lot easier to change your thoughts, because your general thoughts on a day-to-day basis are going to be, well, your beliefs and your thoughts influence your emotions. But I like to work backwards from that and say, well, your emotions also influence your beliefs and thoughts. If you feel good, it's kind of hard to think bad.
I totally agree with that.
Right. So that's the first thing is raising awareness. So the three steps, or, you know, to getting started with this work is first off, just having an awareness. My key foundational principles that I teach are, number one, to develop complete and utter honesty within yourself and with others. And when I say complete and utter honesty, I don't mean like, oh, you've got to tell the brutal truth. Because if you really dig deep, the real deep truth is not brutal. If you think it's a brutal truth, then it's probably a surface truth and you need to dig deeper. And it doesn't mean that you have to blurt out your entire life story to everyone you meet, okay? But it means being completely honest about who you are, what you really want, why you want those things. Just really going deep. And that's difficult. It's a challenge because we're not taught, and we often are taught to repress our true self, to repress who we are and what we want and why we want it, to fit into this mainstream model of the world. So that is a challenge. The second thing is to assume utter responsibility for your entire life experience up till now. Now, if you have been in some bad situations, if you were abused or in accidents or harmed in any way, this is hard. It's difficult to swallow. And I'm not, you know, a lot of people out there are like, well, that's victim blaming. No, I don't believe in victims. I believe that we each are creating our own reality from moment to moment, even before we're born. I believe that we choose the reality that we're born into, and that we choose a life path, or at least some, it might just be some things along the way. It might not be an entire itinerary. Think of it like when people vacation. So, sorry, this isn't going to be the quick three things, but I think it needs to be explained a little bit. So when people go on vacation, there's a lot of different styles of vacation you can take, first of all. And some people, they're very planning oriented, right? And they might have like every single dinner booked at a different restaurant, and they might have all these tours booked, and they've got, you know, we're going to stand on the Brooklyn Bridge and take a picture. You know what I mean? You can get really nitty gritty with the details of your life, of your plan. Or you could be the kind of vacationer that like throws on a backpack, hops on a plane, and hitchhikes around Europe for 3 months with no plan and just kind of flowing from one to the next, and whatever happens, happens. And you're just here for the experience. And then, you know, those are the two extremes of the spectrum of planners, vacations. So the similar thing applies in life. Now, even if you meticulously planned out every detail, though, even if your soul meticulously planned out every detail, you still have the freedom of will to change your choice at any time. So that person that Uber planned out every detail, they could get to Paris or whatever, and while they were on their en route to their meal reservation, they might see a beautiful cafe and go, you know what? That looks more fun than the place that we had booked. Let's go there instead. We still have the free will to be spontaneous and change any aspect of our life, regardless of how planned. You know, people get hung up on this whole like soul contract. Well, I have a soul contract to do this or whatever. No, there's no such thing. Yes, you might have an agreement, but you're not bound to do it or suffer some, you know, horrible consequences or something. You know what I mean? Like, we're not locked into anything. We have the free will and the ability to change any and every aspect of our journey at any point. That being said, yes, some people have been born into horrible circumstances. Sometimes children die of cancer, you know, sometimes whole countries starve to death. Why is that, right? And I think Richard Bach gave the best illustration, so I'm just gonna borrow his for this. If you've ever read Illusions, similar story, the master teaching student about law of attraction and how we tap, it's not called that because that's kind of a relatively new term, but how we manifest things. And at some point about midway through the story, the student asked the same question. Well, why is it that, you know, if we're all creating our own reality, why is it that horrible things happen to people? And, you know, like people get killed, people get illnesses, people have accidents, what, you know, there's wars, there's famines, there's whatever. And the master doesn't answer him at first. They're walking through town at the time, and he's like, hey, let's go watch a movie. So the student goes along, and like they step into the movie theater, and they were watching Butch and the Sundance Kid, and he, you know, the student, the book, the story's written from the perspective of the student, and so he's recounting this experience of how he had already seen the movie, so he knew kind of where it went. So at first, when he was watching it, he was paying more attention to like the details of the filmography, you know, like the lighting and the camera angles used and the delivery of the line and stuff like that. But gradually he kind of got sucked into the story and began to experience it as a story and emotionally. And, you know, he laughed and he cried and the ending happened. And he went back out to the street again. And he goes, well, you never answered my question. And the master was like, what did we just do? And he's like, well, we watched a movie. How did it make you feel? And he, you know, describes how it felt and what he thought about it. And he's like, the master goes, every life is like that. People watch horror movies. People watch comedies. The only difference between a movie experience, because it's an experience, right? You go and watch a movie for a couple hours, it's an experience. The only difference between the experience of a movie and the experience of your life is the length and intimacy of the experience. People watch horror movies, right? They like that kind of experience sometimes. They came here to experience that. If they're experiencing a horror life, that doesn't mean they're stuck. That doesn't mean they have to continue living it. Maybe, you know, I really like, what's his name? The Conversations with God author, Neil Donald Walsh. Yes. I really like his Little Soul story. You know, it's the same thing. Or Andy Weir, The Egg. We're here to have an experience. Mm-hmm. I like Bill Hicks summed it up most succinctly. We are the universe experiencing itself subjectively. I think that's the best explanation there is. So, yes, there are horrible things in the world. Maybe they exist to show us that we want better things. Maybe they exist because we had a soul contract or an agreement to come in and experience those things. Maybe we're experiencing it because we did it to somebody else in the past. I mean, there's all kinds of different reasons, right? I'll give you one of mine. Are we going long? I have to wrap up in about within like 10 minutes max. So I'll be fast. So here's one of mine. And I do what I call question meditation. And so one day I decided to ask the question, why did I choose this life? And what prompted me to ask that was because I've always had a very large ambition, been very ambitious. I want to do big things, change the world, travel a lot, like all these things. And yet I was born into a very poor family, grew up out in the middle of nowhere, Michigan, like no connections, none of the traditional things. And so I asked, like, given that I have all these huge ambitions, why did I choose to be born into the circumstances that really was like a handicap to getting any of that, you know? And what came to me was that the past life that influenced this particular aspect of this life choice, not all of it, I think it's just like an aspect. I was literally a princess. It was a Middle Eastern country, so I don't know what the title is there, but my father was a king, basically, and I had all that. I had all the, pardon me, let me take a drink. I had all that. I had all the wealth. I could just go shop and buy anything I wanted, and they'd send it to, you know, our place. I had people bowing and scraping and doing my will. And in that life, I resented it because it wasn't mine. It was my father's. And if, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of sexism that plays into that too, you know, with how women are perceived and treated in the Middle East. I was a princess and I was pampered, but I was looked down upon intellectually for being a woman, which still happens today, even in the US. Like, but so it was a rebellion. And when I came into this life, I wanted to prove to whoever that I could have all that on my own authority. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I figured this out about, I think 9 years ago is when I did this question meditation. And so understanding that that was part of my motivation allowed me to let go of the victim, any victimhood that I was still hanging on to for those circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it allowed me to also recognize a blind spot that I had, which is because I had that, like, I'll show them, I'm going to prove it myself, I can do it myself, you know, that I subconsciously sabotaged teams that I could have built and relationships that I could have had that that would have helped me along my path to fulfill my dreams, because I had this spiritual, you know, grudge or whatever that I came into the world with. So, and that's just a tidbit. Okay. So getting really clear about who you are, what you want, why you want it. That's part of it. And also it ties right into assuming total responsibility. My soul chose this path. My soul chose this world to be born into. It chose the parents that I was born into. It chose the struggles I was going to have, or at least some of them. Now, I'm not saying all of them, because as we grow, we begin to manifest our own struggles based on past experiences, usually, or trauma. So it's necessary to clear all of that and, you know, get back to the root of who we really are. It's necessary to heal from the trauma and to replace those bad programs with new and improved programs. So that's the third tip, right? Be honest, assume total responsibility. And then third is reprogram yourself, or, you know, have somebody help you do it. It's difficult. It's hard to see our blind spots. It's hard to even recognize that what the programs are that are running. But yeah, those would be the three main things.
So number one, be honest with yourself. Number two, assume total responsibility. Number three, reprogram.
Yes.
Beautiful. I love that.
Thanks.
Yeah, it works for me.
Awesome. Well, I better jet off here. I've got another interview in a few minutes and I've got a setup for that.
Great. So how can people get in touch with you?
Currently, my website is thenakedlifecoach.com. Over the next month or two, I'm going to be launching my new brand, which is goddessnadine.com. There's nothing on that website at this very moment, but that'll be developed over the next couple months. So either one of those. And even if you go to thenakedlifecoach.com, I'll still have like a forward to the Goddess site once that gets built.
Right. So all your stuff is on there.
Yes.
Everyone can find you there and what you're doing and what you're offering.
Yep.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time and what you shared.
My pleasure.
It's been most instructive.
Awesome. All right. Well, have a great night.
And you. Take care, Nadine. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.